If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, where today we'll preview the 2023 Brother UK-sponsored Tour of Britain. Now, Britain's biggest professional road race will start in Greater Manchester, our home city, on Sunday, September the 3rd, and bring its unmatched mix of colour, speed and excitement to Wrexham, East Yorkshire, Nottinghamshire, Suffolk, Essex, Gloucestershire and Caerphilly over the following 8 days. Britain's best domestic teams will do battle with the heavyweight squads of the UCI World Tour in a contest for overall victory, likely to include the biggest names in the sport. Jumbo-Visma's Wout van Aert and the Ineos Grenadier Tom Pidcock are among the superstars featured on a glittering roster. Brother UK will again be at the side of the race as official print and results partner and presenting partner of the Green Zones. Today we'll take a deep dive into the big issues surrounding the Tour of Britain, a challenging economic climate that will see the race run without a title sponsor, and an increasing emphasis on sustainability. Race director Mick Bennett and Ben Barrett, the UCI sustainability consultant, will share their views. And Connor Swift of Ineos Grenadiers will give us a view from inside the peloton. A former British champion and a graduate to the elite UCI World Tour from the domestic scene, it's hard to imagine a more expert guide to life on the road in Britain's biggest race. Now, here with me to consider the course, the contenders, the surrounding issues and much more is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Phil Jones. Phil, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
Thanks, Tim. As usual, great to be here. We've got a huge amount to talk about today, haven't we? And mega excitement here at Brother UK, because of course we've got the Tour of Britain shortly to come. And of course, touching on two stages, two different Brother entities, of course, the home of Brother UK, where I run the business, and our recycling centre of excellence in Johnstown near Wrexham. So yes, fantastic. Thanks very much to Andy Hawes for arranging that this year. Thanks, Andy.
Top man. And we'll be hearing from Andy Hawes, the Tour of Britain's route director, later in this episode. I mean, the race will literally roll past our state-of-the-art Brother Industries recycling and remanufacturing facility near Wrexham on stage two. Stage one, of course, is a mirror of the closing stage from 2019, from Altrincham to Deansgate in central Manchester. And Phil, that stage still lives in my memory. What an unbelievable afternoon.
It was a fantastic finish. In fact, this is a great stage because Cheshire itself, you know, Greater Manchester and Cheshire particularly, is a real hotspot for roadies. Whether you're around Wilmslow, you know, Alderley Edge, or out in the Peak District, we've got lots of people who are professional cyclists that live and train around on these roads. There are thousands and thousands of roadies, multiple clubs, coffee stops, you name it. So I'm really expecting that when you come into Greater Manchester, you know, that city centre finish on the iconic street of Deansgate, you're going to have everyone coming in. It's easy for people to come in. You have this sort of carnival atmosphere and it will be brilliant. And I'm absolutely sure this will again set a benchmark as one of the best stages in the entire race for support.
Well, before we begin our deep dive into the Tour of Britain, let's quickly round up the news from the domestic scene. Brother UK sponsors two domestic teams, of course, Brother UK Orientation Marketing and Hutchinson Brother UK, and both were present and correct at the recent Rydale Grand Prix, arguably the toughest round of British cycling's flagship competition, the National Road Series. This year, Rydale was the third round of the men's competition and the fourth of the women's competition. Now, there's a slight anomaly there, given that the Men's Cycle Classic is a UCI event. Both races at Rydale were held on a picturesque but savagely demanding course in North Yorkshire. Millie Cousins of Alpecin Fenix won the women's race, second was Tiffany Keep of our own Hutchinson Brother UK, and third was the vastly experienced Mary Wilkinson of Team Boombods. Another amazing result there for Hutchinson Brother UK, Phil. Not only did we have a rider on the podium, but we also won the team prize, and Hutchinson Brother UK moves up to second in the overall standings.
Indeed, and if I've got a call with Watto later, the manager, and we're going to just have a chat about things generally. But I know he'd be really delighted with that podium with Tiffany. And when you look at the result, actually, it looked a close call. It was a sprint for the line. It wasn't absolutely a convincing result where somebody just went off with 300-400 meters and just sort of left the field behind. It was a bit of a bunch sprint, and fantastic to see Mary Wilkinson up there as well. Mary, sheep farmer from the Ribble Valley by day and fantastic bike rider by the weekend. So these sort of very, very hilly courses tend to suit Mary's riding style. But Tiffany too, you know, I wouldn't normally expect Tiffany to be podium on course like Rydale, but she did. And I think that just indicates that she's in great form. I know Tiffany isn't just a road rider. She also, of course, races mountain bikes. So this sort of cross-discipline, I think, has got her in really good shape at the moment. So that was fantastic to see her on the podium.
Well, the men's race was a total shutout for St. Piran, as forecast in our previous episode by Larry Hickmott, the editor of Brother UK, sponsored VeloUK.net. Harry Burchill crossed the line comfortably with his hands in the air, followed by teammate Zeb Kiffin and then Adam Lewis. Finn Crockett and Bradley Simmons completed the route. Well, I guess St. Piran can only beat who's put in front of them, Phil, but we really could do with another strong UCI Continental men's team in this country, couldn't we? I mean, I know we have Trinity Racing, but they seem to have more of an international focus. We're really missing the likes of with Sun God, aren't we?
We are, and we can expect to see, I think, on these national A's, this sort of similar repeating pattern at the moment of probably St. Piran taking the 1-2-3, which is fantastic for the team and for their exposure, of course. But we have to ask ourselves the wider question is it good for the whole sport if St. Piran just turn up, destroy a race, and it's just each rider then races against each other within the team? I'm not sure that anybody thinks that's probably the right answer, but it's just where we are right now. So whilst that's happening, you know, let's just go congratulations to the team and to the riders for those results. I think it speaks of a wider, deeper topic, which I know we're going to come on to shortly, about, well, how now do we somehow take steps to provide the environment whereby we can sort of rebuild and create an environment where there are more teams to compete in races like this?
Absolutely. Well, that provides a perfect lead out for the second item on our news agenda, which is British Cycling's formation of a task force to consider the wider issues affecting British road racing. It's a panel of 8 experts commissioned by John Dutton, the Federation's newly appointed CEO, and a guest on the Brother UK Cycling podcast. Have a listen to episode 36 if you haven't done so already. The task force will be chaired by Triple Olympic champion Ed Clancy, who of course was a rider who combined gold medal winning success on the track with an equally successful career on the domestic road scene. Now, the panel has been tasked with recommending measures to improve British road racing at the domestic level, and it's a pretty broad remit. It includes the composition of the elite national calendar, the challenges faced by domestic teams, and opportunities to grow the reach and profile of domestic races. Now, of all the interesting statements contained within the press release issued to announce the formation of this task force was John Dutton's assurance that it will not be, and I quote, a talking shop. Now, Phil, for reasons I'm sure you're about to make clear, you are more familiar with this task force than most of us.
Yes. Obviously, I've been invited to join this task force and have accepted an invitation by John to sit with these very esteemed, knowledgeable people to just, I think, have a broad zoom out view of people that aren't immersed day to day in the mechanics of everything to go, okay, let's just get together, let's put our brains in a room and see what we can come up with as new ideas about taking the sport forward. Now, already since that press release has gone out, Tim, of course, Facebook's gone crazy and social media's gone crazy and the usual finger pointing, whether it could be the National Federation not doing enough. There's all sorts of things going on here. But my view is we have got to stay objective. There is already a road commission at BC, and that road commission is made up of very, very competent people. Mark Etches, Will Fotheringham, Colin Clues, Bob Varney, people that know the sport inside out. The job of this task force is simply just to come up with some new ideas. It's not to try and prepare a complete end-to-end strategy, BC, just go away and implement. Well, our job, in my opinion, is to answer some of the deeper questions that are being asked at the moment. You know, why has the sport got to where it's got to? what should the sport look like in the future? And I think this is probably where some of the more difficult conversations and perhaps some of the ideas need to come from, is to say, well, okay, what are we trying to invent here? Or what are we trying to do? Are we just trying to look back at the sport 10 years ago and go, yeah, we just want that back? Now, that might be the answer, but in my view, that does not take into account now of kind of where the sport sits in the hierarchy of where people want to go in the sport, for example.
Yeah, it's a changing landscape, isn't it? Particularly for young riders. It's true that the domestic scene is in very poor health, but it's also true that young British riders are turning professional at an unprecedented rate.
Here we are now, we're in an environment where World Tour teams are just nipping in and plucking out people, regardless of where they are. If they look talented, the World Tour is just coming in, almost literally ignoring the steps that were there previously and just going, we just want the best people. And we can just see that now. The rules of the game are changing. I think we've got to look at this and say, okay, there's probably two types of people who are in the sport. There's people that want to just have a day job, but race at the weekends. We've got them, and you've got other people that want to make a career out of professional cycling. So what we've got to look at is to go, well, okay, if they're the two groups of people, then what is the best environment for that to happen, given that actually the way that things work now has really, really changed? So what should domestic racing look like to serve those two groups of people? We've already got a thriving B scene. That's really brilliant. So actually, maybe that might be enough. We don't have, in my opinion, enough UCI races in the UK. So perhaps we need to try and get more of the races put on a few bigger races where we get more interest from continental teams to come to the UK, because that doesn't happen very often, does it? It's only Seacole Classic and, of course, the Women's Tour and the Tour of Britain. They're the only races that continental teams come over for. So can we create more? Is that an answer? So there's lots to discuss.
Absolutely. I mean, the task force has certainly been given a broad remit, and that's reflected, I think, in the breadth of expertise on the panel. Former riders, team managers, race organisers, and crucially for a sport that seems perpetually on the verge of going bust, commercial experts.
There's been a lot of discussion about, oh, why aren't these people on it? Why aren't those people on it? Look, what's got to get done? I've got a lot of experience of these sorts of things, of course, in corporate life. What you've got to do is you've got to generally have a small team of people. The bigger the team gets, the more of a talking shop it becomes. That's just how it works. So what John has done is, I guess, just selected a group of people with generalised broad experience. You've got Ed Clancy, John Herity, you've got a couple of riders in sort of Joe Tinley and Monica Greenwood. You've got Chris Lawrence, very, very experienced. You've got myself, you've got Jess Morgan from RAFA, a sponsor. Because these issues to resolve about the scene, they're not just about races and race organisation. Actually, some of the bigger issues are commercial, money. How do we get new sponsors to the sport? How do we get sponsors for races? How does the sport become more financially sustainable? How can it have a new business model? This is actually where some of the fundamentals are around the domestic scene. So therefore, some of the people in the room are bringing skill and competency to have that discussion. It's not just about road closures and location and entry fees. This is a much, much wider constellation of issues. And I think this task force job is to try and narrow some of those down and at least provide a pathway through with some recommendations for BC to have a look at. They may ignore all of them. They may go, none of it's possible. But I think rather than us stand on the side of recording these podcasts and saying, oh, things should be better and what about this and what about that? If invited, yeah, I'm going to go join it, because if I can help, I'm going to help. And hopefully we should all as a group come up with some good ideas to see how at least we can take things forward from where we are. Because things can't get any worse, I don't think, than where we are right now. They can only get better. So let's look forward constructively.
Well, let's get to the main issue on our agenda, and that's to preview the 2023 edition of the Tour of Britain. Now, we have more than a passing interest here. Brother UK has sponsored the Tour of Britain and the Women's Tour since 2014, and this year we will again serve the race as official print and results partner and as presenting partner of the Green Zones. More on those later. Now, race director Mick Bennett has been frank in his assessment of an economic climate that will see the race held this year without a title sponsor. Let's hear now from Mick.
The major hurdle that we face is the signing up of commercial partners for the event, because unfortunately this can only go ahead with the right level of commercial sponsorship, but also and equally the right level of partnerships with the stakeholders, i.e. the start and finish venues, and in some instances parts of the route. And if they decide that, you know, after long deliberation and looking at the amount of resource the venues have that they have to put behind this as well, they come back to you right at the last minute and say, I'm sorry, sadly, we can't do it. It's one hell of a conundrum. It's almost like a Rubik's Cube, you know, you can't get all the green slots in place until you move the orange bits, etc. The challenge is for local authorities at the moment that they don't have the funding to help support the event. And we have struggled, and we are currently struggling with commercial support. Sometimes commercial support can override what you can do with a venue because we can fund closures, etc. But when you don't have the commercial support and sponsorship in place, you can't go to a local authority and say, well, geographically, that fits with the flow of the race from stage one to stage eight, for example, and say, we'll support you. You give us the bulk of the money and we'll fund the road closures for it. We can't do that this time. We're having to draw on our own financial resources to do this. And, you know, we're asking both the Federation and the rest of the commercial world to support us in this. We just hope that they will. Predominantly, it's austerity, it's Brexit, it's post-COVID, it's the increase in pricing of commodities. You know, you've only got to look at a town or a city centre and you can see so many shops closing. There's no softer way of saying it. The country is facing this major economic problem. We've got probably 450 to 500 people all working on this, and a lot of them are not volunteers. You know, we've got a small and very valuable team of volunteers helping us at the start and finishes and in some instances on the route, but the majority and the main block of personnel working on it are paid for, including a hefty sum that we have to pay for the police. With thoughts of promoting culture, media and sport minister, the Home Office referenced the police charges that we're faced. But we keep getting knocked back, even with our own federation charging a significant amount of money as a, call it a license fee, if you like, to get this on the UCI stroke world calendar is a significant amount of money. There's times my tunnel is so long I can't see any light at the end of it. But I've been doing this, although not commercially, but technically, for many, many years, as you well know. And you just hope that we're going to come through it at the end of the day. And we will, whether we come through it in the same shape as we entered it. I haven't got a crystal ball. I just don't know. But I know that the appetite for doing it within Sweet Spot never diminishes. And the encouragement and the goodwill and the hard work that everybody puts in for this wonderful sport of ours is just admirable.
So there was Mick Bennetfield, race director of the Tour of Britain, telling it like it is. The Sweet Spot Group has suffered more than most this year, it seems. Remember that both the Women's Tour and the Tour Series are already on hiatus. The Tour of Britain could so easily have joined them, but Mick and his team have decided to run the race without a title sponsor. Kudos to them. I mean, the absence of the Tour of Britain from this year's calendar would surely have rung the death knell on British road racing. So how important do you think, Phil, is the Tour of Britain to the wider health of the British scene? I mean, it's quite a few rungs up the ladder of world cycling from the National Road Series, isn't it? But are the two in some way connected?
Yeah, Tour of Britain and the Women's Tour, they're known globally. That's the difference. These are the ones that really sit above the parapet as far as the UK is concerned. And let's also remember and remind ourselves, the Tour of Britain is going to be on the television on ITV4 live every day with TV highlights. It's going to be on GCN. It's going to be on Eurosport. It's Discovery Plus. So we're going to see the very best of British roads and British racing broadcast across the globe. that puts this race in a category of its own. It's vitally important, in my opinion, for our entire country's racing scene that the rest of the world looks in and says, okay, this is what racing in the UK looks like. Look at those roads. Look at that countryside. It's fantastic for tourism. It brings people here. It increases our reputation, profile, everything. So for me, this is a cornerstone of our entire racing scene.
Yeah, I don't think you'd find many who would disagree with that, Phil. And if you've been following the clips from previous editions that have been posted to the Tour of Britain's social channels, you'll realise just how good the racing and the riders have been over the years. Dan Martin, Nairo Quintana, Primoz Roglic, Alaphilippe, Van der Poel, Van Aert. I mean, this is a race that has routinely attracted the best riders in the world. I mean, with all that said, though, Phil, I've got to ask, is a race of this scale without a title sponsor sustainable?
Absolutely not. You can't cover that cost year after year after year. All credit to them for running the race this year. I think we've discussed this before, and funding a lot of it from their own reserves. Now, that is not a sustainable position. This race needs big sponsors, big title sponsors. And we've gone over this ground so many times now about the economic environment and how difficult it is. And Mick has raised those issues now. There's all of these issues that businesses and commercial people have that they're trying to navigate through. And therefore, sponsorship is sort of very, very low down on the list. But not every company's doing poorly. This is the issue. So the sponsor is out there somewhere. They are. It's just a question now of finding them. Companies are still expanding, growing, doing well, and wanting to have a wider footprint. And let's not forget that this race brings millions of people onto the roadside. There's television coverage all day long, which is why we do it. It really works financially for us in terms of the return on investment we can get could be nearly 25 times, £25 for every pound we spend in terms of brand reach. Show me many other platforms when you're going to reach that. If you're going right the way up and going into title sponsorship, then, of course, previously with brands like OVO Energy, they've really seen that it's an incredible platform to reach a mass audience. So it's a question really that I think the sweet spot of their new managing director and commercial people to be finding new companies to come in, new companies into the sport who are aspirational, wanting to reach a mass audience and using this vehicle to do that.
Yeah, well said. I mean, for every business that's struggling at the moment, there are others who will see in the depressed economic climate an opportunity. I mean, Cottages.com is a sponsor of the Tour of Britain, and we know that staycations are becoming increasingly popular because of an exponential rise in the cost of foreign travel. Lidl, whatever you want to call them, is now the sponsor of a World Tour team, a budget supermarket chain. I mean, they clearly see value in cycle sponsorship. Why wouldn't Lidl become a sponsor of the Tour of Britain? Why wouldn't MoneySavingExpert.com be the name on the gantry at next year's Tour of Britain? As we say, for every business suffering in these hard times, others will be doing well. Here's another question for you, Phil, while you're wearing your commercial hat. Does the Tour of Britain remain viable? I mean, putting to one side the immediate issue of funding and financial sustainability, how about its long-term viability? Does it deliver value for partners? Could it thrive again in a more conducive climate? You've already told us that it's working for brother.
Absolutely. The race as it stands is viable. All it needs now is a title sponsor and probably a couple of other jersey sponsors, and off it goes. Sweet spot I've got, the relationships with the local authorities, they understand everything about what needs to be done to put a race on at this scale. You know, look what they did in the Worlds in Glasgow. You know, sweet spot were the organising partner for the road race in Glasgow. They do this in their sleep, but financially has to work. We can't run any of these things without the money to do them at this scale and ambition. So the very, very difficult and unpredictable climate we find ourselves in, because Sweet Spot's revenue model requires local authority funding and cooperation plus commercial sponsorship. It's a private-public basket of money, effectively. Both those things need to work. And as Mick highlights, local authorities are having a very difficult time, and many commercial businesses are having a difficult time. So Sweet Spot end up in the perfect storm. But let's look back for the last 10 years and go, has the race been fantastic, well attended, with great sponsors? Yes, it has. It's just in a bit of a difficult time. It will recover, I'm sure. And I think all of us who love this sport, if we think there's a business doing well, let's try and encourage them in.
Well, a pretty deep dive there into the commercial context surrounding the 2023 Tour of Britain, and you wouldn't expect less from the Brother UK Cycling Podcast. But let's turn our attention now to the sporting side, and someone who knows more about this race than most is Conor Swift of Ineos Grenadiers. This will be Conor's sixth Tour of Britain. He first rolled out for the National Tour in 2017 and has missed only one edition since then, that of course of 2020, when the race was cancelled at the height of the COVID pandemic. If you had to draw, Phil, a Venn diagram of brother cycling's place in this sport, well, Conor, I think, would be at the centre. The lad from Cycling Sheffield made very good indeed. Let's hear now from Conor.
The Tour of Britain, yeah. Like you say, the biggest race in the UK, basically. Every professional rider likes to race back at home. Being a professional on the continent now and racing for, obviously, a World Tour outfit and before this, a Pro Continental outfit, all my races are predominantly abroad. Overseas, when you rewind to when I was racing, I was a junior, elite, and then also for like Madison Genesis, a lot of the racing was in the UK, and it was only the odd races that was potentially, you know, Belgium or France and things like that, whereas the tables have turned now and predominantly the season's abroad. So to be back racing at home and on home roads and things like that, it's definitely nice. And I do always think the guys that get to race their home races, they're able to push that a little bit more out of the body and their effort. I was just at Hamburg on the weekend on Sunday, and you know, you'll probably see, I don't know, the top 20 more German riders in that compared to any other nation, and then you'll see at the Tour of Britain more British riders, you know, getting the results just because you go well on your home races, basically. I feel you do anyway. It is quite a prestigious race, and especially, you know, with the history and how it's been. I mean, I can remember Russ Downing telling me some stories about the Tour of Britain, things like that. I think other professionals as well, they find it quite funny when they come over to Britain and, you know, they're all having to drive or ride on the left-hand side of the road, and it's always, you know, a big topic that gets thrown out there. But I think it is a nice race, and especially for those guys that are coming from France, Belgium, Europe and things like that to come over to Britain, you know, it's a nice experience for them. And I think, yeah, the rest of the peloton really, really enjoy this race as well. Yeah, I think it's still definitely up there. And I would say that the crowds, comparing to other races, you know, up there with some of the best, for sure. You know, the Brits will get at the side of the road in any weather and, yeah, cheer us on, which is greatly appreciated. The biggest names in the sport, they've came over here and they've won the race where it's normally placed in the calendar, and a normal road season with the Worlds being, you know, pretty soon after the Tour of Britain, it attracts quite a strong build and these big names, you know, just to get in that last block of racing before the World Championship. Obviously, this year was a little bit different in terms of how the World Championship was kind of like a games, and I think they're going to try and do this every 4 years or so now. But fast forward to next year, it should be before the World Championships again. So it is always normally a nice sort of training race / last bit of racing miles that you can get in the legs before the World Championships. And it's hard racing. One of the big things racing in Britain is the roads. They're not as smooth. There's potholes. And yeah, it zaps the energy out of you, you know, compared to potentially racing south of France or something like that. And you sort of drift along on the roads, or even Germany on the weekend, you know, the road surface is a lot smoother. You can carry the speed a lot better, and you're generally more sheltered in the peloton, whereas on home roads in the peloton you're still pushing higher watts compared to what you would be abroad. That is a big factor in how the race wears down the peloton stage by stage, and yeah, the strongest guy generally normally wins. Looking at the stages for this year, there is a lot more opportunities for the sprinters. 6 out of the 8 stages potentially could be, you know, a bunch sprint. But I also think, given that and given the fact that the Tour of Britain, you know, it has 6-man teams, and you're looking at the teams that are coming this year, there is actually a few good stages that a breakaway might stay. Other teams might mess it up and not quite calculate it right to bring back the break. If teams are wanting a sprint at the end of the day, they've really got to focus on that beginning bit of the race and not let a group of strong guys go away, or a group too big go away. And then you're looking at the last couple of stages, and for sure the last day, that looks like a GC day or something that could promote a attack that creates a select group to go to the finish. I wouldn't say it's an easy edition, but it is an easier compared to, you know, previous editions that I have done of the Tour of Britain. But either way, I think it'll still be a cracking race. It's going to be my 6th outing in the Tour of Britain. I'm getting a bit old now, bit of a veteran of the sport. I will have ridden the Tour of Britain for pretty much every level now. Obviously, Madison Genesis, a UCI Continental. As for GB, the national team, Arkea, a French Pro Continental team. And now as a World Tour outfit, British team Ineos. I think I'll enjoy it, and it'll definitely be nice, you know, having the British fans outside of the bus, and yeah, home roads yeah, it's going to be exciting. And yeah, I'm sure after this conversation, when I'm in the race, I'll reflect back and just think of the previous years.
Great to hear that from Connor, a rider who knows a fair bit about racing the Tour of Britain. You know, Phil, I always think of Connor as the quintessential British pro. He's come up through the domestic ranks. He's acquired a lot of World Tour polish, but underneath it all, there's still a solid core of Yorkshire grit.
Undoubtedly, he is a typical example of somebody that has really come through. You know, we were talking earlier in the pod about taking all of those steps, doing all the domestic racing, hard, rainy, wintry Sundays, all of this. He's got all of that in his kit bag, chain gangs, everything. And here he is now at the World Tour. And if ever a rider deserved their success, for me, it'd be Connor Swift. He's a cracking bike rider and obviously a very, very nice chap too. And I'm delighted he's going to be over at the Tour of Britain. I'm sure he's going to have his eyes on stage three or stage four. Stage three, Gaul-Beverley, and stage four, Sherwood Forest to Newark. There'll be a lot of roads I'm sure Connor knows quite well there, and I'm pretty sure we're going to see him active in those two stages in the race.
Well, I would love to see it. The last time we saw Connor race on British roads, if we discount the World Championships in Glasgow, was at the National Championships in Redcar in Cleveland, where his performance was just amazing. I mean, it was your archetypal hard, scrappy British race, and Connor was at the heart of it. Can we extrapolate his form on British roads from that performance, Phil, or would that not be comparing apples with apples? The Nationals is a one-day race, of course. The Tour of Britain is 8 hard stages. How do you think Connor will go?
Yeah, I'm sure Connor is going to do ever so well. Looking at this particular race, I mean, you're right when you said it looks like a fairly flat first 6 stages and then a couple of lumpy stages to sort of bring it all together at the end. So I think that's going to dictate the sort of racing style that we're going to see through the Tour of Britain. Clearly, there's going to be brakes going to allow to go. There's going to be some good sprint stages. You know, that's going to be absolutely fantastic for Sam Bennett, isn't it? If he's looking to sort of ride himself back into form and chuck his hands in the air. But you've got to be looking at Wout van Aert for this. You've got to be looking at Wout van Aert going, yeah, okay, as long as I'm up towards the front for the first 6 stages, stage 7, stage 8, it's sort of saying there's probably going to be some sort of major shootout between probably Pidcock and Wout van Aert to take the Tour of Britain. I think it's going to play out in a very, very interesting way. But clearly, I think Connor's going to have a very big part to play. If Pidcock, for example, is the nominated rider, then you wouldn't want anyone better than Connor Swift to be there all day, guiding you through the wheels, being on the front, being that diesel engine and making the race active for you.
Well, we spoke earlier, Phil, about the Tour of Britain as a race in transition, so to speak, as it fights to find new sponsors. But how about Ineos Grenadiers as a team in transition? They've got big names going out the door, either into retirement or leaving for other teams. I mean, at their zenith, when they raced as Team Sky and won the Tour de France for fun, they might have regarded the Tour of Britain as a little more than a workout. But do you think it will have greater significance this year for that team?
I think so, yes. We've seen a very, very big transition, haven't we, in Ineos Grenadiers from their old days of Sky, ultra-dominant scientific racing, to suddenly this team today where they're very much more active, going for stages. So they've really, really changed. And I think if we look in 2023, you might argue they haven't probably had the blistering season that perhaps they've had in previous racing seasons. So I'm pretty sure for team morale, they might be looking at the Tour of Britain as a race they could not only compete in, but potentially win. So, yeah, I think this would probably be a big morale booster to end the season if they could get someone like Pidcock on the podium or even taking the win.
Well, a pleasant immersion there into the sporting side, courtesy of Connor Swift. But let's get our teeth into one of the meatier issues surrounding this race, and indeed any professional race. And that, of course, is sustainability. Sustainability is an area that affects all of our lives, personal, professional, commercial, you name it. The climate emergency is real. Now, sport is facing increasing pressure to become sustainable. The United Nations launched the Sport for Climate Action Framework 3 years ago, and the UCI, that's cycling's world governing body, is a member of that framework. The signatories have all pledged to halve their emissions by 2030 and to become net zero by 2040. Now, to bring the story right up to date, the UCI launched its Sustainability Impact Tracker on August the 1st. What is that? Well, it's an online platform that will enable cycling stakeholders to calculate their carbon footprint and to measure the environmental impact of their behaviours against United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. I caught up with Ben Barrett, the UCI sustainability consultant, to talk through cycling's response to the most important issue of our times.
You can't manage what you don't measure. So by the UCI providing this platform for all cycling stakeholders, we're going to make it more accessible, make sure that carbon footprinting and setting actions, putting actions in place in order to reduce our environmental impacts from the sport. It really does begin with setting a baseline, identifying where those hotspot emission sources are. And, you know, it makes sense to tackle those priority areas first because you'll have the greatest positive impact. Through this tool, all of our stakeholders will be able to measure full impacts across the environmental, social, and economic spheres in order to develop action plans, monitor their progress, and communicate transparently with fans, with their partners, and with all other stakeholders. Travel is the priority area of impact and emissions. The fact there is a world tour, you know, world tour needs to travel to different places in order to spread the sport and increase cycling development worldwide. The challenges are around how many people are traveling, how far are they traveling, how are they traveling? But you can also see already some innovations from different places. And just a one that pops to mind is the Tour Down Under, which this year had their prologue raced on road bikes. And that was simply to reduce the kind of logistics impacts of taking a whole nother set of bikes for what was 7 kilometer ride around central Adelaide. So you can see there are some decisions being made to make things better, to make the sport more sustainable. And likewise, the recently completed Arctic Race of Norway, because it takes place so far up and near the Arctic Circle, teams can't take their regular buses and vehicles. So the organizer there provides an entire fleet of electric vehicles. They overcame the biggest challenge of how do you charge all these electric vehicles by partnering with some local electricity companies who help develop mobile chargers. Now that is a really incredible innovation because those chargers also get used by other sports events up in that area. Because it's not very densely populated, the electric vehicle charging infrastructure is not as widespread as it is in the rest of Norway. There's amazing things happening there. It's just getting to the point where those become natural reflexes, that we don't see these as being sustainable, but we actually see those as being normal. There's a lot of engagement with the local authorities about road closures, about suitability of hosting a start and finish in a certain part of town. The conversation around charging infrastructure and suitability to host a start and finish is really going to become an essential consideration over the next 6 years. There is definitely going to be brands, commercial partners out there that will want to be associated with the bicycle as a catalyst for climate action. I think partners as well, just from firsthand, from a lot of the teams in the World Tour, the partners are demanding stronger climate action, demanding transparency. So there's pressure being applied at all areas. But again, having partners come on board, such as his brother here, as a sustainability partner, a wonderful way to work together for shared goals. And the more that cycling organizations, teams, event organizers, national federations can work with their partners, the more we do with that, the more attractive the sport will be to the world's most sustainable and ethical companies wanting to get involved as well. So it's it could make a really great story, a great picture of a truly low carbon green sport in the future, but it will take the help and support and most importantly, the expertise. I think there's a lot of sustainability expertise within cycling sponsors that could also help unlock some of these challenges for us as well. Any future targets being imposed on professional teams, they really need to align with the UCI and the Sports for Climate Action Framework. Cycling is a sport based on data, innovation, and improving performance. The amount of data on performance that these teams will have on their riders already, you know, we need to take that same approach when it comes to our environmental and social impacts as well, and use the data to inform the decisions that need to be made. But yeah, I think making sure we're all aligned, that we're all working to the same target, which is based on IPCC's scientific fact that globally we need to reduce emissions by 50% by the end of the decade. That also has to apply to the World Tour.
So great to hear there from Ben Barrett, the UCI sustainability consultant. Phil, you'll be very familiar with this issue already, running a major business. Sustainability isn't an afterthought any longer, is it, for any organisation? It's fundamental to your operations.
Whatever your organisation does, in all honesty, Tim, whether you are the UCI or whether you're brother, we all need to be making action and progress against SDGs, Sustainable Development Goals. So it's no surprise to me that the UCI now are upping the game here. They've signed up to this UN Charter for sport and they have to be taking action.
okay, now look at who are all of our stakeholders, race organisers, World Tour race teams, not just road cycling, across the whole piece here, Tim, mountain bike racing, any UCI-based racing event.
Yeah, this is about more than road racing, isn't it? The recent Cycling World Championships in Scotland gave us a pretty clear indication of the breadth of the UCI's remit. I mean, what's being proposed here is more than tinkering at the margins, isn't it? Halving emissions by 2030, becoming net zero by 2040. I mean, this is going to represent a sea change for teams and for race organisers.
It's going to be, I think, a painful journey for the World Tour. I think it's going to be very painful. These things are never easy. When I think about some of the work we've had to do within our place, fundamental changes to the way that we think about things, the way that we run the business, choose suppliers, measure ourselves, how do we create performance indicators, how do we put this front of mind when at the same time we always have commercial pressures. World Tour teams have the same commercial pressures. They've got to continue to attract sponsorship. But what you have to remember is, and this is really why we do all the change that we do, it's because our customers are demanding it of us. Okay, we've got on one hand, we want to do the right thing. But on the other hand, the commercial pressure is actually a customer is also saying, what are you doing about sustainable development? And they're asking us those questions.
Yeah, I guess a business like Brother has a 360-degree view of this, both as a company with customers to satisfy and a sponsor making demands of its sponsored entities. Just give us your thoughts here, Phil, on the complexity of the challenge and the timescale that the UCI has set. I mean, is 7 years long enough? And what level of detail might a sponsor demand?
Zoom forward to 2030, that's going to arrive very, very quickly. And if your major sponsor of a World Tour team says, well, we are a very sustainable business and we only want to do business and spend on sponsorship with people that share our values and our goals, is that you? Have you got there? Can you say to somebody, oh, here's our set of sustainable data to sort of roll into your CSR report or the sustainability index? Now, if I have that conversation today with anybody really in cycling in the UK, nobody can give me that information. Nobody. If you ask Brother UK, what is our CO2 footprint? What is our waste footprint? What's our energy footprint? What is our annual mileage? How much CO2 we saved with travel? Show you our sustainability policies, our travel policies. I've got it all. I can talk to you in that language today. If you want to buy a fleet of Brother printers, I can talk to you about a circular economy, end to end, in, out, end of life, data collection, reporting. I can do that all today. Now, that has taken me years of effort and investment to get to that point. So imagine you're now a World Tour team and all you really want to talk about is bike racing and power and output and data and logistics and trucks and riders and salaries, all of these wonderful things. You've basically got to ram this issue right the way up at board level now. So somebody in charge of that team has got to make this a priority for your team, a strategic objective where it may not have been a strategic objective before. So this is going to create some pain. And, you know, as we heard from Ben, there are these solutions out there, but they're all a bit scattered right now. They've found some unique solutions on electric vehicles, we heard, in the Arctic Race in Norway. Fantastic. Race organisers have had to go, well, okay, the cost of getting the time trial bikes here was far greater in terms of the cost of CO2 and various other things than the actual stage. These are the fundamentals, and it's going to change everything, in my opinion. We talked a little about this on the last episode. It's going to change the way we think about the sport. And so it's essential. It's got to be done. There's no getting away from it, but everybody needs to start now.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I mean, one of the many points made by Ben was that, in a way, cycling teams are uniquely positioned to make this change. They are obsessed with data. Everything about professional cycling is measured. Everything about professional cycling is shaped by innovation. Now, nobody is pretending that any of this is going to be easy. Naturally, I had a good chat about sustainability with the team at Sweet Spot, and of course, they're doing all they can to make races like the Tour of Britain more sustainable. But to consider only one aspect, they told me there are up to 60 police motorbikes in the Tour of Britain's race convoy. Now, is Sweet Spot in any position to demand of the Home Office that those bikes are made electric? Of course not. And even if they were, Does the charging infrastructure exist in places like Wrexham to keep them all running? Again, no. So, you know, it is going to be complicated, but put simply, professional cycling will have to change. The idea that a bike race will operate in the same way in 2030 as it does in 2023 is laughable. I mean, the world will have changed beyond recognition in the next 7 years, given the increasing severity of the climate emergency, and cycling has no exemption from that.
Absolutely. And I just want to link back actually to the British Cycling Road Task Force, Tim. These are the sorts of issues that also need to be thought about the future, because all of this trickle down that we spoke about in the last podcast needs to be considered for domestic racing, because UK racing will need to be following that pattern. There'll be pressure on the governing body. There'll be pressure on teams to sort of go, okay, we've all got to cascade this now. We've got to be seen as a global sport to be doing our bit. As with all of this big stuff, it always starts big and then trickles down, doesn't it? So we've got to assume now that some of the metrics that World Tour teams are being asked to report upon, that domestic teams may be being asked to report upon. And that will be difficult, because getting engaged in sustainable development activity, it actually does cost money. You know, we have to spend a lot of money on making sure we've got the right reports and we're using the right contractors and all of these sorts of things. So I think this is yet another potential future cost that's going to come into the sport that probably no one's really thinking about very much at the moment. If you in a World Tour team want to put somebody on your staff who has expertise in this area, you're probably going to need to be adding £100,000 a year onto your salary bill to get the right person in with the right qualifications to do the right job for you. So there's a new salary cost you probably didn't think about.
Well, we've talked about the challenges posed to the sport by new sustainability measures, but we should also discuss the opportunities. Cycling, you'd imagine, is further along the curve than sports like motor racing or even stadium sports, which must have enormous energy requirements, as well as the travel impact of the 50,000 or so people who make up a stadium crowd. The bicycle is still the ultimate mode of low carbon transport. Racing takes place on the open road, often in scenic locations, and to that degree, I guess, it is an attractive proposition for businesses wanting to celebrate their own sustainability credentials. All of that leads us rather nicely, Phil, to Brothers' sponsorship for a second year of the Green Zones at the Tour of Britain. Tell us about that.
We've got a leading centre of excellence in North Wales, very, very close to the sprint stage, actually, of stage two in Wrexham. So I've emailed the managing director of Brother Industries UK today to say, make sure we've got a massive crowd out the front of the factory and lots of Brother logos, et cetera, et cetera. But the point really about this is to say, look, this is what we do as a brand all day long, every day. And sponsoring the Green Zones just seems a really nice fit for us. People do associate us quite strongly in the cycling, road cycling sector. We've been around now in the sport for over a decade. If you say Brother, if someone's into cycling, that they've got almost immediate brand recall. So we just want to again reassociate also the brand Brother with doing good things around sustainability. And therefore, the Green Zones just seemed like a bit of an obvious no-brainer to me for us to put our name around that.
Well, it seems like a really nice fit. I mean, for listeners who aren't aware, the Green Zones are areas throughout the course where riders can dispose responsibly of their gel wrappers. Those are promptly collected by the race organisers and sent to a business called Enval in Cambridgeshire, which use a very sophisticated process involving pyrolysis to convert the wrapper into energy. So another deep dive there into an area one step removed from the racing, but fundamental to the future of our sport, as indeed it is to every aspect of our futures. Well, having described the economic and environmental context, so to speak, in which the Tour of Britain will take place, let's now consider the course. This year's race will take place over 8 stages: Greater Manchester, Wrexham, East Yorkshire, Nottinghamshire, Suffolk, Essex, Gloucestershire and Caerphilly. And the big takeaway is that the first 6 of them are flat. Now, this represents a big change from recent tours of Britain, which have become progressively harder and represent a throwback to a time when the race attracted the world's best sprinters, Cavendish, Greipel, Kittel et al. So what type of race might this year's course serve up? I asked route director Andy Hawes, who's had a breathless few weeks serving as the route manager for the road races at the recent Cycling World Championships in Glasgow. Let's listen to Andy.
This year's Tour of Britain, it probably bookended by the two hardest stages of the race. The opening stage is a reasonably lumpy affair, and with the rake coming, I think it's about 40 kilometres from the finish, that there is still time for it to end in a bunch sprint. And as we know, back in 2019, when we finished along Deansgate there, and Mathieu van der Poel absolutely cruised it across the line, didn't he? It makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up, that stage from 2019. Stage two will be a very quick stage. It's not a circuitous route. All the roads are in good condition and quite wide and should lend itself to some very, very good races. We're a smidgen under 110 kilometres, which is the shortest road stage we've ever done. And unfortunately, that wasn't by design. The stage should have been 40 kilometres longer, but one of our stakeholders had to pull out at the last minute and say, look, sorry, we don't have the time or the funds to be able to support, which was a shame because it took out a very iconic climb. We should have been going up and over the Horseshoe Pass in Denbighshire, but unfortunately, Denbighshire were unable to sort of commit to us. So we had to reduce the length of that stage. I am looking forward to stage three, dropping down into East Riding, Goole and into Beverley. First time we've been into that county for a very long time. Really excited about that. Should produce some excellent racing, some really, really good roads. And then Nottinghamshire, I mean, last year's Nottingham stage, I know it was the final stage that we did of last year's race, but for me, that was the standout stage of the five that we did. You know, we've been working with Nottinghamshire a number of years now, and they really do understand how to help us put on the greatest bike race in this country. And the help and support that we get from those guys is just incredible. So yeah, really looking forward to stage four. I think if anything's going to throw up some surprises, it will be stage five. We've gone to a part of Suffolk that we've never been to before, right in the bottom southeast corner of Suffolk, if you like. Pick somebody up and drop them in these roads or in these little villages, and straight away people will say, yeah, no, I know where I am. I'm in Suffolk. It is quintessentially Suffolk. It's got some super little narrow roads that wouldn't be amiss in the Tour of Flanders. It's going to end in a bunch sprint. Absolutely it is. But is there opportunity for people to get out of sight, out of mind in some of these early little roads and stay away for the day? Who knows? But yeah, the racing on these roads is going to be exciting. Then we go off to, obviously, Southend. We hosted the finish there a couple of years ago for the women's tour, which was fantastic. Again, Essex roads. What I found with Essex, they must get bored of driving in a straight line because every other kilometre, there's a 90 degree right into a 90 degree left. So there's lots of sort of like traditional headwind country, shall we say. The penultimate stage, stage seven, which should have been last year's stage six, down in Gloucestershire. And that's got a couple of stings in the town. I think the first climb has got an average of 9.3% for that 2 and a bit kilometres. That's within the first 20K as well. We're going to shift all the way down to Caerphilly and two ascents of Caerphilly Mountain. This year, we've only categorised two King of the Mountains per stage. I think there's probably sort of five or six climbs that could have been categorised on the final day. I was feeling a bit mean when I designed that route and, you know, just to make it a little bit tougher. I remember when we drove the route for the first time early this year and I was like, oh yeah, oh, I've forgotten how steep Caerphilly Mountain is. So I did chuckle to myself. I won't be making myself available for post-race comments from riders after stage eight, that's for sure.
Well, if you want the inside line on the parkour for this year's Tour of Britain, who better to ask than the route director? Chapeau to Andy for giving us his time in what for him has been an unbelievably busy period. Plenty there, Phil, for us to consider, but apart from stages one and two taking place on home roads for Brother, I think it was stage four that caught your eye, wasn't it? And for reasons other than racing.
Yes, absolutely, because the race will go past the Tom Simpson Memorial. So you've got to look at that and go, there's got to be a domestic rider looking there at that stage going, you know, if there was a stage I wanted to win, it would be that one. But the other thing that struck me about that, which again, for people who sort of love the sport, is it will go to Worksop. And for those that didn't know, Worksop was the home of what was Carlton Cycles, a very, very famous bicycle manufacturer in the UK, which was later purchased by Rally. For those that think back to sort of the Rally professional racing team, there was a chap there called Gerald O'Donovan, G-O-D, God, who was frankly the god of specialised frame building. And he ran a division within that particular factory, SBDU. Anybody who was anybody that was a professional cyclist in the UK back in the day pretty much had their bikes made by Gerald O'Donovan. He was the man when it came to building bikes for domestic professional races. So I hope the commentators pick that up. I know they'll definitely pick up the Tom Simpson bit, but
believe it or not now, the old factory is now called the Knotts Arena, and they've got all sorts of things in there, like indoor bowling, and they do lots of community events. I go there for the odd soul event that my friend DJs at, and I just have a shiver down my spine. And believe it or not, I met his son there at a Northern Soul event, the son of Gerald O'Donovan. I was just sort of like, do you have any bikes in your shed that you need to get rid of? And it was like, no, we've got nothing from my dad's era other than a few photos. It honestly was like, wow. But anyhow, so yeah, let's hope that we get some good stories around Worksop.
Wow. I mean, what are the odds of meeting Gerald O'Donovan's son in a leisure complex built on the former site of Carlton Cycles? An amazing story. Well, before we heard from Andy, we were talking about the Tour of Britain's former appeal to sprint royalty. And Sweet Spot have announced already that Sam Bennett and Fernando Gaviria will return to the race this year. These are the first of the fast men to be confirmed, but could we see others?
Without a doubt. I mean, my goodness, I looked at this route and I just thought, oh, I wish Mark Cavendish was here. You know, I just wish he was here because of what happened in the Tour de France and all that sort of stuff. Literally, this year's Tour of Britain, it would be perfect for Cav, wouldn't it? We would just see this hero who we all love chucking his hands in the air, I'm sure, more than two or three times on this year's Tour of Britain. I just think it would have been perfect to see him here, and it would have brought even greater crowds out to see the Manx Missile competing on some of these stages. But it will make for, you know, for fun racing, some really great bunch sprints, there's no doubt. But stage eight, that just looks an epic stage, doesn't it? You know, this double ascent of Caerphilly Mountain, you've got Rigos, you've got Bryn Dawr. It's a lumpy, lumpy, lumpy stage, and probably the race can be won on stage eight. If you ride a sensible race and you're well positioned, we're looking at, it looks like, a major shootout on Caerphilly Mountain for the Tour of Britain win in 2023.
Absolutely. I mean, this seems a race almost purpose-built for a final stage decider. Let's move on to the GC contenders then, and we're a little bit blind here because we're recording before the publication of the final start list. We know for certain that Wout van Aert, Tom Pidcock, and Stevie Williams, who recently took overall victory at the Arctic Race of Norway, are among the GC riders. So, Phil, contenders for overall victory, who's your money on? Can we look past Wout van Aert?
No. Yeah, this, for me, screams Wout van Aert, this race. And after that disappointment, potentially, in the Worlds, he must be wanting to come here and think, yeah, do you know what? Nice end of season booster for me. Let me put that one in the bag. Let me take home the Tour of Britain to end my 2023 on a high. He's so capable of riding. You saw at the Worlds, he's one of the world's top riders. He's so multifaceted in the way that he rides. He can do everything. And I think the race itself will suit him. I think he's always well positioned. And in particular, he can look at those last two stages and know that he can compete, particularly on stage eight. So I'm going to go out there and go, it's Wout van Aert's race to lose.
Yeah, I don't think many people would disagree with you there, Phil. And what a worthy winner he would be again. Of course, van Aert won the race in 2021. What kind of challenge do you think Tom Pidcock could launch? It's funny, isn't it? We talked earlier about Ineos Grenadiers being a team in transition. And Tom, I think, is still working out what type of rider he is. He had a challenging Tour de France as the Ineos leader. It was the first time he led a team at a Grand Tour, and I'm not sure it was entirely to his taste. And then, of course, he went and won a gold medal at the World Championships on a mountain bike. But could the Tour of Britain, six-man teams, hard to control, no time bonuses, plenty of opportunities to attack, at least on stages 7 and 8, I mean, could this be his type of stage race?
Yeah, I'm not sure really. I mean, I think the main thing for me is actually he's got to have, if he wants to win the Tour of Britain, he's just got to have some strong rouleur riders around him, hasn't he? Because he needs to be sure that he is finishing every day towards the front fundamentally, and there's no major time gaps appearing. There's no doubt when it gets to stage 7 and 8, we know what Tom Pidcock is capable of on lumpy roads and hilly roads. My goodness, he's, you know, he grew up on them in the UK, in and around Yorkshire. So these stages won't faze him. So for me, Tom Pidcock, it's all about making sure he is protected, safe, and with very, very small time gaps day after day after day. He doesn't need to be winning stages between, you know, stage 1, stage 6. He might fancy stage 3 or stage 4, sort of home road sort of stages for him. So big crowds out. No doubt it's going to have a lot of support alongside people like Connor. So he might look at one of those and go, yeah, fancy that day. So I think perhaps stage 3, stage 4, and definitely to be competitive when it gets to the last 30K of stage seven. As we know, it gets a little bit lumpy. And on stage eight, he's just got to be positioned to make sure that if Wout van Aert does make a bid for victory, that he's on his wheel and the two of them can absolutely shoot it out.
Yeah, I think this could be a really good race for Tom Pidcock. Fingers crossed. I mean, let's not forget he missed out on winning the Amstel Gold Race by millimetres, ironically to Van Aert, in 2021. He has an exceptional sprint for a rider so light. I don't think the number of sprint stages will faze Tom. Finally, Phil, let's consider Sam Bennett's chances of making an impact on this race. Sadly, it seems a long time since Sam was a member of the World Tour's sprint aristocracy. He's been surpassed by riders like Jasper Philipsen in recent years, but as the old saying goes, form is temporary and class is permanent.
I hope so. You know, Sam's a likeable fellow, isn't he? When we saw Sam Bennett at the top of his game in the Tour de France, what a very capable guy he is, you know, not frightened of anything, ready to go. He's got the afterburners. So you're right. It's just really about the form. So I hope that the team around him that Bora bring can position him well so that he can compete and hopefully take a stage or two in these sprints.
Now, just before we wrap up our Tour of Britain preview with more from Route Director Andy Hawes, let's consider the other stage race of interest to Brother Cycling taking place in the first week of September. The Rasnavan is Ireland's leading stage race for women. The name literally means women's race, and it's been run under that banner since 2006. It has an impressive roster of former champions and was won in 2019 by Claire Steeles, who now competes in the UCI Women's World Tour, but was then riding for Brother UK Fusion RT. This year, the RAS is a 5-day, 6-stage affair, and both of our sponsored teams, Brother UK Orientation Marketing and Hutchinson Brother UK, will be present and correct. So what sort of race is the RAS? Where does it fit into the hierarchy? What type of test might it offer our sponsored teams? I caught up with Mark Botley, the manager of Brother UK Orientation Marketing, to find out more.
It's not a national series race, but it holds huge importance for the development of our riders. None of them would have done a stage race this year, apart from our Norwegian rider Tuva Moreland, who's done a few races in Norway. The rest haven't done anything remotely approaching a stage race. It'll be a situation where, having learnt everything throughout the year, not only with themselves but as a group, to kind of put it all into play in this kind of fantastic stage race. The parkour, demanding. Road surface is generally similar to what it is in the UK. You know, you kind of get some pretty hard, dead roads with the odd good bit of road surface. Technical descents, pretty hard, long climbs. Nothing extreme, nothing like Rydale or Lancaster, not that kind of steepness, but just got long climbs of kind of 5-6%. They're pretty tough. And it's just obviously one day after another, and, you know, the riders just get more and more fatigued. The first stage is normally a bunch finish, or I think it always has been a bunch finish, quite a technical finish because you've 90 degree left-hander is probably 200 metres, if that, from the finish line. It's an uphill sprint, so, you know, you need to be in the first two or three round that corner if you're going to stand a chance of winning. New stage at Tremor, which is actually where we're based, so I'm hoping we're going to have a bit of inside information about that, so a bit of inside knowledge. But that, I'm led to believe, will be the hardest stage of the race because the last 40k is pretty much uphill, downhill throughout, so traces the coastline a little bit. The Queen stage is the one with the two really big climbs, two proper good climbs in the last 30k. I mean, the first 50k of the race is pretty benign. You know, the bunch generally just tends to kind of roll along, and then it just all kicks off at these two thumping great big climbs. The time trial is the fifth stage, so that's pretty short. It just goes around the castle, so there's not a lot of time to be gained or lost there. The last stage is a town centre race around Kilkenny, which in itself is quite tough because there's a kind of off camber 90 degree right hand turn up through the finish, which is cobbled and very slightly uphill. So it's not massively technical, the crit, nothing like a kind of Tour Series crit, which we have obviously over here, but at the end of the whole week it certainly is a challenge. Slightly different to what we're used to in as much as the crit, because obviously there's laps out and for mechanicals and crashes. As I've alluded to, we have a young team. If they all get round, I'll be more than happy. It'd be nice to kind of have a result, one of us getting up there at some point in the race. We will take that. As long as they all come away with a smile on their face and they all get round, then that's our main focus, really. It is a learning race for them. In all honesty, Tim, without Brothers' help, there's absolutely no way we'd be able to do this race. They are so important to us as a sponsor. That is the difference between us being able to do this race and not, if it wasn't for Brother.
So great to hear that, Phil, from Mark Botley, the manager of Brother UK Orientation Marketing, And it seems like his young team, which won again recently with Georgia Lancaster, is in for a valuable learning experience.
Yeah, the Raz is legendary, really, in the women's racing scene. It really is. And as you describe, there aren't enough stage races, non-UCI stage races, where a rider can experience that kind of race, transfer, recover, get started. The weather's normally really bad, so it's testing. You know, that's what I would say is the Raz is always known as a very testing race. And if anybody can win the Raz, it normally indicates a real strength in rider, a rider that actually is a little bit a cut above the rest, you know, because they've been strategic, they've done the positioning, they've got the strength, you know, they've got the tactics and they've got the fitness to get through those normally quite attritional conditions, but quite hard roads and parkour and profile. So, yeah, absolutely right, we should mention the Raz because it's probably as important a race in the race programme for British domestic teams as it is Irish teams.
Yeah, definitely. We look forward to the Raz, as we say, a race in which we've been lucky enough to taste success already in the shape of Claire Steele's and Terry Williamson's much-missed Brother UK Fusion RT squad. And my goodness, given the way that Hutchins and Brother UK are going at the moment, they won the Lancaster Grand Prix, finished second at the Rydell Grand Prix, and even shared a podium with the new world champion, Lotte Kopecky, out in Belgium. Well, you wouldn't bet against them winning in Ireland. Well, let's hear again now from the Tour of Britain's route director, Andy Hawes. It's likely that many of you listening will be planning on visiting the Tour of Britain at any of its start and finish towns, or even out on the road. So I asked Andy to recommend the best places to watch the riders pass.
This year, there's a couple of very unique opportunities to be able to get to see both the start and the finish quite easily. Obviously, with stage two starting and finishing in Wrexham, which is always handy, and then stage five starting and finishing in Felixstowe. But then having said that, if we go all the way back to stage one starting Manchester, I know people did it in 2019 when we started in Altrincham. You know, it's just a quick jump onto the metro there and you're in the heart of the city centre straight from the start. So anywhere is accessible on the opening stage. You know, as you say, it's a big circumference of Greater Manchester. So wherever you're going to get to see it, you're either going to go to the start and then, you know, drop out into Tameside or Oldham or somewhere like that to go and see the race come past. And then quite easy to get back into the city centre to see the finish. The same with stage two, certainly with the start and finish being in the same location, it makes it a lot easier. And it's quite easy just to nip out in an eastward direction from Wrexham, pick up the stage maybe in Cheshire West and Chester, and then dive back into the city to watch the finish. Stage three, the most iconic shots from stage three are going to probably be when it comes through Bridlington, and then it runs along the coast for a number of kilometres before diving back inland for the finish in Beverley. So yeah, I think grabbing some shots of the race out along the coast would be where I would be heading to. Again, Nottinghamshire. It's almost like a big figure of eight. If you knew your way around Nottinghamshire, you could quite easily see him at the start and then see him twice within a handful of kilometres because it passes so close, and then drop down and go and see the finish down in Newark-on-Trent. A good cyclist, I would suggest, would probably be able to see at least four times on that stage and get a really good sort of feel of what Nottinghamshire has to offer in the way of little lanes and great cycling. Felixstowe, you're going to get to see it twice. It goes quite deep into Suffolk, so you could drop into Ipswich and then get back to watch the finish. Stage six, the Essex stage, is very similar in makeup to the Nottinghamshire stage. It does sort of zigzag through the county. I would say you'd get to see it a good three or four times out on the route as well. The Gloucestershire stage, again, you could probably see the Gloucester stage in at least two or three positions before it got to the finish, because it sort of like does a loop out of Gloucester down into South Gloucestershire and then back up. So you could quite easily be at the start and then see it a couple of times out on the route, or literally ride from the start. It'd be a lovely ride down into Gloucester itself. And then the final stage, you need your climbing legs on to try and chase the stage. As I said, it is literally up and down like the heads of the valleys. But yeah, there's certainly, I reckon there's a good opportunity to see the race twice out on the route before sort of dropping down into Caerphilly. So I think all of the stages this year are super spectator friendly.
So thanks to Andy for a host of top tips on where to watch this year's Brother UK sponsored Tour of Britain. And it's unlikely that he'll find himself alone on Caerphilly Mountain next week. Don't forget, the Tour of Britain's results service is sponsored by Brother UK. Follow the Tour of Britain online at TOB Cycling on Facebook, at Tour of Britain on Twitter, and at The Tour of Britain on Instagram to get the results hot off the press. Phil, thanks very much indeed for joining me today. As ever, we've covered a huge amount of ground, from economics to sustainability, a professional stage race for men in Great Britain, and a valuable development race for women in Ireland. Not bad going. Thanks to all of our guests for their contributions, Ineos Grenadier Conor Swift, Ben Barrett, the UCI Sustainability Consultant, Tour of Britain Race Director Mick Bennett, Tour of Britain Route Director Andy Hawes, and our own Mark Botley, Manager of Brother UK Orientation Marketing. Phil, thank you very much again for joining me, and thank you to everybody out there for listening.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.